You're listening to the Creepcast on DownrightCreepy.com. Now, here's your creepy host.
Hello, and welcome to another special edition of the Creepcast. Today's show, we're going to talk about the Shudder original film Scare Me that's streaming on the platform right now. Go check it out. It was written and directed by Josh Rubin. He also is the main lead alongside Aya Cash, and we have both of them on the show today. I was able to chat a little bit about the film, what it was like to work together, and it's a unique film. It really features three main characters throughout this entire feature, and two of them carry the film for most of it until the third act, when we see Chris Redd, Saturday Night Live player, come in to the film. So I wanted to get a little bit more information about what it was like to have to work one-on-one with another actor and carry a feature film. It really plays out more like a stage play in some ways. And you'll hear Josh talk about that a little bit during his portion of the interview, and what it was like to work with Josh. Aya Cash, you may know from The Boys, You're the Worst, some great stuff that she's done. So it was really fun to see them interact on screen and the energy that they had. And then you add Chris Redd in, and boy, it's a fun ride, guys. It's just a fun thing to put on during Halloween. It's fun storytelling. And so, yeah, let's jump into the interviews. We're going to start out here with Aya Cash, and then we'll be hearing from Josh Rubin. Joining me today on the Creepcast, we have Aya Cash from The Boys, but today she's here to discuss her new film, Scare Me, that's going to be on Shudder October 1st. So first, thanks for taking the time to talk about Scare Me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to set things up a little bit for people. You play Fanny, who's a best-selling horror author of a book called Venus, and she runs across an aspiring author that's not quite the status that you are on a writing retreat in the cabin. So it's you and Josh Rubin, and the film kind of plays out like a love letter to horror fans, I feel like, with references and harkening back to fireside chats and that sort of thing. But it felt very organic to me, and it seemed like a ton of fun to film. So I'm just wondering if you guys had any chance with it just being the two of you and Josh being the writer to kind of riff and layer onto these stories that you're telling each other to try and scare one another, or was it very set in stone by Josh?
No, there was a very strong script, and then Josh was like, best idea wins, like we can riff off things, we can improv and do that. There's a little bit about Zumba that I contributed. But also Chris Redd, who is in it, is just a mad genius. So there were times when we would just sit back and just do 15 minute takes of Chris Redd telling the story and continue, you know, the story or the line might be five lines long, and then just let Chris go.
that's awesome. Maybe we'll get that on like a DVD special feature.
I'd love
to see that. Well, I thought everyone played off of each other really well, so that's why I was asking. Like, the writing's so strong, like you mentioned, but it really felt like you guys organically were just taking shots at one another. So that's awesome. I could also see this film easily playing out on stage, like a stage play, just because of the structure of it. Have you ever had a role kind of quite like this, where it was one location, really two actors with a third one kind of in the third act kind of added? Have you ever been a part of a project like this where you and another actor were so dependent on one another?
I don't think I have.
And how was that for you?
It was great because Josh and I are friends. So Josh and I have known each other for years, and through my husband, actually. And then he ended up on You're the Worst for an episode, which is so fun.
Yeah.
So we'd worked together before, and we knew each other. So there was a lot of trust of him. I know how smart he is. I know how funny he is. I'm a huge fan of all the videos and characters that he's created. So in that way, it was easy. Like, it wasn't like we were strangers coming, or I was just sort of an actor for hire that had auditioned and gotten this job. So that helped. You know, he would be like, can I come over and read through this with you? And come over to the house, you know, before we started shooting. So that's a huge benefit, I think, was our friendship.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it plays out on screen. You mentioned trust, and you trust Josh. I have to ask, without ruining too much, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, do you think Fanny actually trusted Fred from the get-go, or was she just screwing with him a little bit?
Yeah, I think she's messing with him and she doesn't trust him. I think both are true.
Yeah, that makes sense. With the idea around this is to scare each other. So I'm just curious, was there any scary stories growing up, or more specifically, like urban legends that you had passed around when you were a kid that you might have taken part in? And if not, is there an urban legend that you really like or that scares you, even if you know it's not necessarily real?
I mean, you know, I was not a big horror kid, but Beetlejuice is one of my favorite movies ever. So I remember, like, as a kid being like, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Like, waiting for him to show up. And similarly, I feel like Candyman, like the idea of saying Candyman in the mirror, that like he would show up. So basically, I'm like a person that I can't say names three times.
Yeah, I was going to say Beetlejuice is kind of the... PG-13 version of Candyman from an urban legend standpoint.
They're remaking Candyman, right?
Yeah. It's coming out. I think they pushed it to next year with Nina DaCosta. Yeah, I'm interested to see.
That I'm excited about. I think Nia's genius.
I actually would really like Shudder. I know they've been doing like merchandising stuff lately with Scare Package and that kind of thing. Creepshow. I really want a Venus book to come out.
Totally.
Or like a sticker book for Halloween or something like that.
Well, there is, so that story is sped up in the story of Venus, is sort of like, you know, montage-y in the movie, but we did the story of Venus all out.
Oh, really?
So there is a longer version, but you know, pacing wise, it would not have worked to have another long story right in the middle there. Yeah. But that, you can probably get all the details from Josh.
That's super interesting that it exists, like in some form at least.
Some longer form. Yeah, longer form.
See, that's perfect. Shudder needs to get on like a sticker book immediately for Halloween. I feel like it's perfect. An adult sticker book. One thing I really liked about the movie, and people will see, is how the stories are brought to life more than just you guys telling them and your facial expressions, but if there's a werewolf on screen, we see that kind of creeping hand come out that's practical effect and that sort of thing. Was that something that was written in that you guys were going to communicate the story in that sense, more of a visual platform because it is in one location? Or is that something that Josh and you kind of workshopped, as you said, you were kind of practicing back and forth and shaping the story?
No, that was all Josh's idea. I think he knew the constraints of the budget and was like, how do we be creative with this? I mean, I do think that parameters like that often create the most interesting choices. So he really thought deeply about that. And also the sound design of the movie is a huge part of the storytelling. And those little practicals too are sometimes very subtle. Like I'll come up with the vampire teeth on for a second and you're like, wait, but I thought we were in reality. And there's this little extra layer of, are we not in reality? Are we not just telling stories?
But I love that so much. And it was something that you don't really expect because you're into the movie at that point. And then those little added touches, like, yeah, I absolutely loved that. So I was curious about that aspect of it. I want to kind of push into five kind of quick rapid fire questions about Halloween and horror and just get some answers and learn a little bit more about your love potentially for Halloween or horror. We'll see. I don't know. So first one, favorite horror villain or monster?
Favorite horror villain or monster? Oh God, this is, you're gonna learn my lack of knowledge.
Oh no, on the spot here. Beetlejuice, you brought up Beetlejuice.
Yeah, but that's not, I feel like that's cheating. Sure, Beetlejuice. Thank
you. All right, we'll say it one time. We won't say his name anymore. Have you ever played with a Ouija board?
Yes, absolutely. Pure Wiccan as a teenager, let's be honest. Yeah, The Craft too. I just took a friend to see The Craft in Toronto, who had never seen it, a younger friend. And I was like, oh, you haven't seen it? We're going to see The Craft in the theater.
Yeah, that's great. Now, did you ever TP a house or smash a pumpkin when you were a teenager?
No, I was more of a let's go drink in the park than actually cause any
real chaos. I agree. I'm in the same boat. Favorite Halloween candy?
Why can't I think of the names? The little orange ones with the yellow tips that you can put
candy corns?
Candy corn, yeah.
Oh, man. We might have a debate or a fight on that, but I'll let it pass because it's five quick questions. Yeah. If you died, came back as a ghost, who would you haunt and why?
I'd probably haunt whoever... is doing terrible things in the world at the moment. I'd haunt dictators and Breitbart reporters.
We have similar answers to that. So we both know who we're talking about. We'll leave it at that. I agree. Well, I want to say thanks so much for joining me here on the Creepcast. I want everyone to check out Scare Me on Shudder October 1st. Have a great Halloween, and thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much. Bye. Yep.
Bye-bye. So great to have Aya Cash here on the Creepcast to talk about Scare Me. And if you heard the interview, I'd ask her a few questions, and she would refer back to Josh about how that was his creative direction for the practical effects and that kind of thing. So let's hear from Josh, but before we do, I want to talk a little bit about the origins of the film. And so a little bit more insight into the film. This actually debuted at Sundance, had no distributor at the time, but it got really good reviews, crowds were having a blast with it. So it's great to see it finally land on Shudder, and especially this time of year. You can tell he really put his heart and soul into this movie, so much so he emptied his 401k to finance it himself. So if you really want to lean into this as a passion project, I mean, you can't do it any more than that, I feel like. So happy for him that it's having success and that Shudder picked it up. And now we get to hear from Josh, and you listen to the interview, you kind of hear from Aya that certain things that I was asking her, she said, well, you need to go ask Josh about that. You know, ask him about the practical effects that we see creep into the film and punch up the storytelling and bring it to life. And you can tell with the money that he spent, or it was a well spent, I should say, with the cinematography in the film, it is a comedy, right? Like a horror comedy. We don't expect to necessarily, in my mind, think about cinematography in a horror comedy. But it's really gorgeous what they captured there in the cabin. So, let's hear the other perspective with writer and director Josh Rubin. Josh, thanks so much for joining me here today on the Creepcast. How's your October been going so far? Have you been able to indulge in any Halloween traditions with the pandemic going on?
Yeah, I've been taking advantage of HBO Max and Shudder and Hulu's like Huluween situation. Yep. So trying to watch as many horror movies as we can. Discovered It Chapter 2 last night. Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, I'm late to the game, but this is rad. So many great homages to Dream Warriors and The Thing and just stuff I hadn't seen before. So just watching movies. I'm reading a lot of Nathan Ballingrad and Paul Tremblay and trying to like get my my creepy readership on.
Yeah. Well, I thought I'd share with you because I found myself in a situation I thought was interesting when I was watching Scare Me. We finally did something during the pandemic and my family went on a quote unquote vacation into a cabin in the woods. And it was a week before Shudder released Scare Me. So I had a screener. So my first viewing of Scare Me came in a cabin at night after I put my son to bed just by myself, like in a corner. And I thought it was kind of funny. And I knew what I was getting into, but I didn't realize kind of how a little meta it became as I started watching it. So I thought that was just kind of a fun fact. But
I'm so glad you watched it, man. What a good experience. It's like experiential.
It's kind of like watching Host on Zoom.
Yeah, and watching it
on Shudder on your computer. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, let's dive into Scare Me. You mentioned a little bit about all the stuff that you're watching. So it feels a little bit to me like a love letter to horror and the genre. And you have references in there, I know, from Tales from the Crypt with the Crypt Keeper, The Shining, with the Overlook jacket that I want to talk about a little bit later in your Jack impression. So was it interesting to dive into the horror genre coming from more of a comedy background? And was it your first opportunity in the genre?
It wasn't my first opportunity in the genre. I did, I've done a ton of horror parody my time at College Humor, which was sort of my backdoor, film school, so to speak. But I actually, with my cinematographer, how I realized Brendan Banks and I were sort of made for each other to do these types of projects was the first thing we collaborated on was a horror short called Cabin. It was about a man.
That's perfect.
That was truly, like solo guy, you know, going sort of mad in a cabin, theoretical demonic presence. And I was a horror lover before I was a comedy lover or comedy person. Comedy's in my bones, but I think even more so formative to my experience as, you know, a fan of the genre was having my older sister, you know, Rachel, just introduce me to everything from like Freddy's Nightmares and, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. But, John Carpenter's Body Bags and Stephen King's Cat's Eye and Alien. I mean, I devoured it all. I devoured it all as a kid, especially the brighter films of the 80s, like Fright Night. When, you know, characters in the Friday the 13th and Freddy universe started to get a little more cartoonic and broad.
Were you, with those types of influences, were you VHS, like were you video store kid? Did you hang around? Because I mean, I love doing that. And I obviously miss it, but we have great things like Shudder that kind of replace it, but you can't replace that feeling of walking into the store on a weekend and picking out a movie based on a cover, right? Like, was that you as a kid growing up? Because that's what I did.
Oh my God, absolutely. And I can remember covers like Gothic and Shocker.
Yeah.
Monkey Shines and all of the great, you know, RoboCop, like all of the really bold VHS covers that sort of drew me in. What an experience. I mean, to be able to shop like that, you know, truly shopping and shopping for a physical, you know, a physical object that you later, you know, use to pop in, rewind, and the smell, the whole thing. So it was a big part of my growing up. And then I remember, like, specifically as a 16-year-old, the most excited I was about getting a car was to drive out of school, like out of the school parking lot, and make a left on Route 28 and go to Woodstock Rental, like Woodstock Video Rental, and get a video or two for that weekend. Like that was what I, as a teenager, was most excited, you know, to do. Get, you know, Howard the Duck and Halloween 5 and watch that.
Yeah, I actually made these VHS kind of loot crate type of novelty items. So they're VHS cases, but inside they've got little, you know, pins and buttons and stickers and that kind of thing. I'm all about that. I got my little VHS collection set up over here.
Incredible.
So there was something that I really liked about the approach that you used in Scare Me to kind of punch it up a little bit. Because, you know, you're watching the film and you think it's one thing, but then you get these little added extra practical effect elements, like the werewolf claw kind of creeping in, or Aya when she comes up with her vampire fangs. Is that something that when you were first coming up with the idea, you envisioned from, like, you know, a lower budget perspective, we can add some punch to it like this to really bring these things to life? Or was that something that you found later on through, like, workshop sessions with Aya?
From the very beginning, I knew that I couldn't afford to cut to the vignettes away from the campfire, so to speak. I knew I couldn't afford the full werewolf costume or an effectively scary one at that. So the idea became, you know, the more committed they get to their stories, the more they sort of come to life, which is your experience, our experience of when people tell great stories, you become, you know, enveloped in them. So I knew going into it that that was going to be the edge that made it rewatchable, at least for me as a viewer. Like, okay, this is the kind of movie, what would be the kind of movie I'd want to rewatch if it were this minimalist? And part of it was, you know, not just watching these you know, great actors kind of make big, bold swings, but also making it a sound designer's movie, making it a composer's movie. And that, yeah, that barreled us to be, you know, to being here.
Yeah, I like the sound design. I wasn't able to experience it till I watched it again at home, because I was in a cabin, like trying to be quiet. And then it wasn't until I watched it at home where I had a little bit more surround sound. I was like, oh, wow,
yeah,
this really punches when you're watching it at home.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I really love that aspect. It kind of reminds me, you know, when you are telling stories around the campfire, how your imagination kind of takes over to help tell the story feel the story a little bit more. And so we're seeing that imagination in a sense come to life on screen. So I really did like that. Something else about the film is that, you know, it's essentially two people until the third act for the most part, right? How was it to have to be so dependent on another actor in a feature film versus something that's maybe a skit or a short film, where I feel like it's a little easier if you're dependent on one other person, but to pull it out into a feature, did you find that more rewarding? Was it more challenging? And just could you maybe speak to that a little bit?
I think it was, well, totally rewarding for sure. And certainly from my experience, not only as a director, but to be able to act opposite them and encourage Chris and Aya to go bigger and be bigger and make bolder kind of choices in their space. That became the most rewarding piece of it, you know, to watch it sort of work. I think the only challenge is, you know, you as a director, as a producer, you want to make Aya and you want to make Chris and you want to make Becky and your crew feel comfortable. This is a scrappy film. You know, Aya, who we had for 9 days of our 13 and a half day shoot, she got the flu for and a half days of that, like really bad, including when she like growled in my face well before COVID. You know, so I want to take care of my, you know, my actor and my actor's instrument. She loves score bars. I get her score bars, you know, chocolate bars. And I got her, you know, a juice and made sure the tea was always kind of at the ready for her, that there was just consistent aid and consistent, you know, creature comforts to sort of, you know, protect her and protect her instrument, because the movie hinges on her just as much as myself and Chris, but certainly Aya. Yeah. So that was probably the biggest challenge, you know, the limited time that we had, just making sure everybody was happy.
Well, I love the chemistry you guys had together. I mean, it was the energy you guys brought, everyone was great, even though there's only three of you. It felt bigger than that even. And I know you guys are friends, so I'm sure that probably helped the relationship too, bringing it to life.
It did. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not besties. We've known each other for a while. We've always been cordial with each other. So it was the first time we really worked together. I just thought, completely on a whim, did an episode of You're the Worst.
Yeah.
Completely serendipitously, coincidentally, in advance of our shoot. So I just knew she was well-respected, well-loved amongst her crew, but also that she doesn't take the gig too seriously, you know, and that's the kind of actor I love. You know, we're not working at a hospital. We're like creating characters in a cabin. Yeah. And I really, I appreciate and love that kind of work ethic, you know, it's just full on collaboration and love for the play.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you landed on that word play, because I feel like this thing could be a stage play, like on Broadway. I feel like Shudder needs to do some live Scare Me on Broadway event for Halloween.
I'm already at work, at least sort of conceiving what the adaptation would entail and how it would look on stage. But it's the total dream at this point for folks to have expressed it, you know, from you know, VHS freaks in Texas to, you know, horror fans in our kind of, in our network, to kind of random new fans of the genre who've just kind of stumbled upon the movie. They've all said similar stuff. Even Emily Gatto, I think from the get-go, was like, you know, at some point you should adapt it. It feels like a play. And it would be the total dream, and especially to originate it with Aya. But I'm already just kind of, you know, bubbling over thinking about how fun that would be in a COVID-free world.
Right. Well, that's incredible. You're already thinking about it. I mean, it sets up so perfectly. I asked Aya about this a little bit, but with Shudder doing merchandising now and like licensing stuff, why are we not getting a Venus book? Or an adult sticker book? And do we have a backstory about Venus? Because we don't hear a ton about it. And I heard from Aya that there was more of a story, but you know, you only have so much time to work with, so we only get bits and pieces of it. Is there more to it that you thought out, a backstory behind it? And I'm just curious about that.
Yes, Venus is actually the name of a script that I wrote, I'd say at this point, 40 pages of 20 years ago, 18 years ago, about a zombie outbreak that only affects women. And I wrote it furiously and terribly after a breakup, and about, like, literally, you know, this movie that kind of ends with, you know, these zombified women literally pulling a man's heart out, you know, such a dramatic writer. But it's one of the ideas, like some of the other story elements in Scare Me that make the anthology, that were ideas in my mind collecting cobwebs, or in drawers that were collecting cobwebs over the years. So, you know, it's kind of an ironic thing that Venus was like the pinnacle keystone of Fanny's career, yet it was the thing that I never finished and thought would be, that I hit a wall. I wanted it to be my kind of, you know, my take on, you know, Night of the Living Dead. But I think it would be really fun, maybe 10 years down the road, even though we've seen every different side of a zombie film you could possibly imagine, to make a film, call it Venus, or maybe something, you know, separate, to not confuse it with the Peter O'Toole movie that was so good, but to make it and kind of nod to the fact that it's in Fanny's universe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Might be really fun.
Man, that's super interesting, because she said there was a backstory. I didn't realize it was that you actually had like a half script kind of developed and it was bigger.
Oh, shot 14 pages. You know, the Venus section of the story that's 60 seconds, that was cut down from at least six minutes of the two of them acting out. A very granular version of it.
Yeah, you know? Interesting.
Too fatty.
That sets up the second part of my next question, but I want to know, how did you get Chris Redd involved in the project? And I loved his Overlook pizza jacket, and so that's why I wanted to ask, you know, he was wearing that in the film. Did you get to keep it? If not, can I have it? Like, where did that go, and how did he get involved?
My cinematographer would kill me for not knowing off the top of my head what the name of the printing company was. But there's a printing company based out of Rhode Island that made the jacket for us. And my brilliant clothing designer, brilliant wardrobe designer, Sean Dermond, he was the one who added like the little details, like, tell him Jack sent you, is it cool, on the back of that jacket. I was like, when, if and ever we have a premiere, I want to wear that jacket. But Brandon was very sweet. I think he gave it back to, or gifted it back to, the guys who made it.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is very, very
cool. Yeah, I loved Aya's shirt too. It was pretty sweet, since you brought up the costume design. But yeah, I loved her shirt too.
Oh my god, yeah, people love the sweatshirt. She Megshops.com. But everyone's like, where can I get that exact thing? I feel like at this point there's gonna be some replica.
I figured it was from a place that existed already, but I wasn't sure. So you said it's Meg Shops?
Megshops.com. Yeah. Okay. So Meg Shop in New York City, that's the vintage clothing store, but it's a one of a kind.
That's cool.
We were worried for a split second. We were like, is this a branded thing and we don't have the money to like clear? But it's a one of a kind.
I feel like we're just coming up with all kinds of Shudder merchandise for this movie right now. I mean, well, socks could be on that, sweaters.
Dude, I gotta say, there's a great artist on Instagram, Jackie Torres, who made some stickers, who made some character designs, rather, that I licensed from her to do stickers. So I have a little merch shop called The Mind House on T Public, where people can go and buy a Fred sticker, a Carlos sticker, or a Fanny sticker. And there's more cool stuff coming down the pipeline too. Yeah.
That's cool. Kind of a follow-up. So you mentioned some kind of exploration with Venus, and you'd shot some stuff and it got cut. So that brought me to special features, right? Like, I heard that Chris did some incredible takes, improv takes, that just went on for like 15 minutes that you obviously can't put in the film. Do you think we'll see some of those takes, or maybe even some of the stuff you cut from Venus on like a Blu-ray special feature? That's one thing I miss about the VHS store and like VHS, right? Or Blu-ray, DVD, that you get special features. So,
yeah, the iTunes package. We're trying to assemble something of it. If I don't know, I guess we'd have to find like the original drive. And I don't know if we'd have to get our editor involved, Patrick Lawrence. I'm sure he'd be happy to. But there is indeed a 12-minute, 15-minute take of Chris Redd acting out a whole murder sequence when we first meet him. Oh, it'd be a perfect night to do it. And he enacts like, you know, a Zodiac kill with a silencer, putting a body in a car, sending that car off the bridge, strangling, chainsaws. And we just like have him go and go and go. And then there's like a precursor to the musical sequence. The three of us are sitting on the couch and like almost chanting this sort of goading of Fred to play the devil in the Devil Singer sequence. I would love to find, at the very least, would love to find Carlo's improv, Chris's improv, with Out of Control.
I feel like you've almost got an entire short film just for that.
Yeah.
It's like a whole nother segment that's a short film. I kind of want to wrap this up a little bit and ask, I feel like I got you on the podcast. I need to ask, when you do a movie like Scare Me, you have to tell me about some scary story that you've experienced, or something that maybe got passed around as a kid. Was it an urban legend, a ghost story? Was there a paranormal experience? Is there anything you can share with us to scare us, if you will?
I have two. They're scary, you know, different ways. The one I would make up, the more supernatural one, was, I never really had a ghost experience, and I'm one of those people that is desperate for it to happen to them. But the one I would tell people is actually sort of loosely based on, or the nucleus of the idea behind the grandpa story, which is I just would tell people that when I was home alone, I saw a mangy dog, after hearing noises upstairs, make its way like hobbling down the stairs and out the back door of our house. And then I didn't know how it got there. And like, basically would tell the like ghost dog story, which is like barely a story at all. The ghost dog's also a great Forrest Whitaker movie. That was just one I'd make up and tell people. So that did not happen.
It's like scary stories to tell in the dark, like entry.
Yeah. It kind of feels like that. But one that, I mean, a terrifying thing that happened to me was I was in Austin my first time. I think it was my first time in Austin at South By. I used to have a podcast, or one that's kind of dormant right now, called the Mind House Podcast. And my girlfriend at the time and I were in an Uber on the way back to our place, and he exhibited very unusual behavior and dropped us off. I insisted he drop us off like a block away from our place, and he like circled the block, and so we had to like hide behind a fence.
That's
the
weird.
High beams like cut through the slats of the fence, and then we like scrambled up the stairs when he disappeared, and we like got back into this rental and didn't turn any lights on and watched as the car circled again. And I was just like, no, yeah. And he was like a college kid, very strange looking, kind of Philip Seymour Hoffman-y type dude. And I was like, I'm good.
No influence on the driver in the film, I assume.
No, the driver in the film is based on a almost, I think, word for word, a pitch from a driver upstate who once picked me up. I had finished a job, and so they paid for a car service from like Newark Airport to part of the upstate region. And he was pitching me on a screenplay idea that James Cameron would love if he could just get it on his desk. And then started telling me about, you know, all the financial mistakes he made, and about his crumbling marriage, how he lived with his parents. I was like, this is incredible. incredible. This is too much. So I cannot put this in a movie.
I feel like I had a very similar experience that you just mentioned in Austin, ironically, with the same type of
genre.
It's bizarre. I guess that's Austin, right? Keep it weird. So
keep it weird.
They're doing it.
Keep it freaky. Yeah.
I do love Austin, though. But, well, Josh, I just want to say thanks for taking the time to talk about Scare Me today. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I hope everyone checks it out on Shudder. It's available right now. It's a great Halloween movie to put on and have some fun with friends if you're going to have them around. Hopefully you're quarantined, but, you know, whatever. Watch it on Zoom. Before I let you go, is there anything else you have that you're working on right now that you can tell us about?
My second movie, we just wrap post on it. And, you know, hopefully there'll be a trailer in the coming months, if not years. But it's called Werewolves Within and stars Sam Richardson. That's probably about all I can say about it. But keep an eye out for Werewolves Within, but not before checking out Scare Me on Shudder.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time and have a great Halloween.
Yeah, my pleasure. Same to you, all of you. Keep it weird.
So there you have it, Josh Rubin. That was such a fun interview for me. As soon as we started talking about the VHS store, I knew he was my people. So probably could have done an entire Creepcast episode with him. And who knows, maybe we'll be able to get him on someday for a full episode and less about the interview. But please do check out Scare Me on Shudder. Support the film. Support filmmakers like Josh. And excited to check out Werewolves from Within. With Sam Richardson. It sounds like a blast if it's a comedy with werewolves in it, and Sam's great. So if you're not familiar with his work, Detroiters, Veep, check it out. But thanks to Shudder for setting everything up. Check out Scare Me, and also May the Devil Take You Too. I'm about to watch that here in a little bit. I would recommend it as well. A quick update is what's to coming up here on the Creepcast. We have Steve and Tango from Ghost Nation. You may remember him from Ghost Hunters. And they will be on to talk about the season premiere of Ghost Nation Season 2 and a 2-hour Reunion in Hell special that will air on the Travel Channel this week. And then the special will be on Halloween weekend as part of their Ghosttober programming, which also includes a special Ghost Adventures investigation at Joe Exotic Zoo. So I'm excited to talk to Steve and Tango tomorrow. Check that on the Creepcast. And if you would, please rate, review, subscribe to us on Apple iTunes and wherever you listen to podcasts. So, and that's all we got for today. So I hope you guys are making the most of your October and have a great Halloween.
Listening to a Downright Creepy original on the Crickets Podcast Network.